From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Lots going on tonight. Next hour, world-renowned psychic Sylvia Brown joins us. Talk about some of her past and future predictions and bringing all the news of the day to you right now. First of all, this late story, a fire sweeping through a crowded Buenos Aires nightclub in Argentina, killing at least 88 people, injuring some 267 people. The blaze broke out late Thursday night during a rock concert, and television images showed rescue workers carrying some of the wounded away on stretchers. The death toll from last weekend's earthquake, the tsunami catastrophe, rose to more than 117,000 people now, as Indonesia uncovered more and more dead from ravaged Sumatra Island, where pilots dropped food to remote villages still unreachable by rescue workers. A false alarm that new killer waves were about to hit sparked panic in India. Up to 5 million people around the tsunami-struck Indian Ocean region do not have access to the basics they need to stay alive. 5 million people, and that includes clean water, shelter, food, sanitation, and health care. The United Nations World Health Organization says it needs $40 million to get those supplies to the victims immediately. But also, they are talking now around Malaysia that the death toll could exceed 400,000 because many of the affected areas could still not even be reached for search and rescue operations. A moderate earthquake shook northern Japan late Thursday, the country's second tremor this week. The quake hit at around 10:30 p.m., had a preliminary magnitude of 5.0, centered off the Pacific coast. California, by the way, bracing for more rain. Storms continue to hit. Several people dead in California storms now. They even had a destructive tornado. The whole earth seems to be changing. Also, there appears to be a volcano that has erupted in the Indian Ocean. Let's go very quickly now to Dr. R.B. Tremblay, who has developed software to predict volcanoes. R.B., tell us about this volcano, if you could, sir.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I've been on your program so much lately, I should volunteer as your co-host.
No, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. These are
anyway, yes, the Barren Island volcano has erupted. We got confirmation on that today. It'll be updated on our website as of tomorrow's updates. The volcano erupted on Tuesday, the 28th, after the great earthquake and aftershocks hit that area a few days previously. People have been evacuated from Barren Island. There were no reports of injuries. We do have lava flowing out of the rim of the crater, which towers above the Indian Ocean about 500 meters away. And this particular volcano is known as Barren 1. It's located some 135 kilometers northeast of the capital, Port Blair, and it last erupted in 1995.
Is this eruption related at all to what's been going on over the past week?
Well, that's a very interesting question. In fact, I kind of anticipated you would ask me that. And if you remember, when I was on your show on September the 17th, that's when I was on for 2 hours.
Yes.
One of the questions that we had in the question and the answer session, we were talking about Mount St. Helens and Rainier and so forth, and one of the questions that came up was, is the earthquakes in California affecting or causing the eruption of Mount St. Helens? And my answer was, not necessarily, but there has been a lot of research done in that particular area, meaning is there a lot of earthquake correlation between earthquakes and eruption of volcanoes? And there has been some correlation once in a while, but usually not. So, you know, the argument can go either way. However, with this particular eruption of the Barren Island in the Indian Ocean now, right after this particular earthquake, just giant earthquake, if you will, this kind of lends credence to that there is something to that particular train of thought. So I've always had an open mind on that. The problem is, as I said before, is that we can't see the plumbing. However, this is another excellent example of a major quake triggering, if you will, a volcanic eruption.
All right, we're going to continue to monitor all these situations, Doctor. And also, I had heard just a few days ago that there might have been a volcano eruption around Russia on one of their areas. Had you confirmed that?
Oh, we've had Karaminsky, Shevoluk, and Bezimiani erupting almost all year long, so that's really nothing new, and it has nothing to do with the earthquake in Sumatra at all.
Okay, Doctor, thank you for the quick update, and we'll be in touch with you again, okay?
Okay, thank you, George.
That's Dr. R.B. Trembley. In a moment, by the way, we're going to go to Jim Berkland to talk with him about this tsunami, the full moon, perigee, epigee, and exactly what is going on. Meanwhile, an FBI official says that there have now been six recent incidents involving laser beams aimed into the cockpits of commercial airliners. A federal law enforcement official said the Bureau is investigating one such report in Cleveland, two in Colorado Springs, Colorado, as well as three others. The FBI investigating whether it was a prank or whether there is another motive. Authorities said the laser had to have been fairly sophisticated to track a plane traveling at an 8,500-foot altitude. A recent memo sent to law enforcement agencies said there's evidence that terrorists have explored using lasers as weapons, but authorities say there's no specific intelligence showing that Al-Qaeda or other groups might want to use these weapons in the United States. I'll tell you one thing I don't understand is lasers and light go straight, right? You know, the light is really not bending at all. It goes just on a straight beam. The plane is up. How can it get into the cockpit? To me, it sounds like it's coming from a satellite or something else above. Maybe it's a test. I don't know, but that is a question, and in another week or two, we'll get some experts on and talk to them about that. Congressman John Conyers of Detroit, ranking minority member of the House Judiciary Committee, is going to object to the counting of the Ohio electors from the 2004 presidential election when Congress convenes to ratify those votes on January 6th. And a letter dispatched to every senator, which will be officially published by his office shortly. Conyers declares that he will be joined by this by several other members of the House. Representative Conyers is taking this dramatic step because he believes the allegations and evidence of election tampering and fraud render the current slate of Ohio electors illegitimate. So we'll find out what happens on that story. In Evansville, Indiana, two Walmart employees have been charged with felony animal cruelty after police say they followed a manager's orders to shoot and kill a stray cat. The men, assistant managers at a Supercenter Walmart store, told police that the store's manager ordered them to get rid of the animal that was living in a storage trailer behind their store. Actor Jerry Orbach, star of Law and Order, is dead. He died of prostate cancer. The 69-year-old who starred in Dirty Dancing, The Last Exit to Brooklyn, and, of course, Law and Order, revealed he was battling cancer. In early December, he died in Manhattan after several weeks of treatment. And in Chile, Santiago University is offering a degree, believe it or not, in UFOs. The director of the course says there is something happening out there. We just don't know what it is. The graduates will learn how to use scientific tools to investigate phenomena and specific methods of investigation. In a moment, we will go to geologist Jim Berkland and get his take on the recent tsunami. Back in a moment. Geologist Jim Berkland was suspended from a California government geology job when he made a prediction that a major quake would occur during the 1989 World Series in the Oakland Bay Area. Well, guess what? It hit. And the government told him not to make any more predictions. Now he's retired and publicly states quake windows. Mr. Berkland uses tidal flooding tables based upon lunar perigee, time when the moon is closest to the Earth, to affect more gravitational pull on the Earth. And he is our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, the tsunami and this quake occurred during a full moon on December 26th, and right in line with your theories.
Yes, indeed. It really put a damper on a very enjoyable holiday season for me and my family. Here is one of the greatest disasters in the history of mankind.
And it's not over yet.
Oh, that's so true. And these casualties have just mounted and mounted. And I heard what was on your show,
Yep. Or
news, and might be 400,000 when they're finally done. Of course, the greatest disaster of all time was in 1556 in Shenzhen, China. that in terms of flooding has caused more deaths, I think, with giant rivers. But there were five. Let me see, 840,000 killed.
Jim, I want you to take us through the scenario on how do you think this earthquake and subsequent tsunami all occurred from the moment because there was also an alignment of the sun, the moon, and a couple planets as well, right?
Yes, but the planets, when you start talking about planets, you're definitely into astrology.
Right.
And I don't go farther than astronomy with the actual measurable physical forces from the sun and moon. And the moon is more than twice as effective on raising our tides as the sun, which is surprising to most people. But it's because the tide-raising force varies with the cube of the distance, and the moon is so much closer. It thus has 2.2 times the effect on our tides that the sun does. So every time the sun, moon, Earth are lined up, that is a syzygy. And that is the time of the month when you have the highest tides. And we have a syzygy twice a month in most cases. You have a new or full moon. And February is one month that can't have two full moons. Occasionally you can have, in a 31-day, you can have three syzygies. But then, but anyway, that's if you have a full or new moon on the 1st or 2nd, then you can have it again on the 30th or 31st. But in a 28-29 day month, you can only have two at most.
All right, but tell us now, based on what you think happened, what might have occurred.
Okay, well, all year long, I've been warning about the near record tides that were coming up in December, and the primary window was the 10th through the 17th, and I made four predictions for that period, and recognized that there was a secondary window from the 25th, the day before the full moon, on the 26th. So Christmas was the opening of the secondary window. I did not make a specific prediction for that window because the higher tides had already happened. But often, once you've had extremely high tides, then it starts to wind down. Then you build up to a secondary high tide period, and that can be a trigger for a fault line that's long been under strain and ready to fail. And an earthquake can only yield the strain that's been storing up on it for many years. And so now this particular fault, we won't have to worry about any more 8s or 9s for many, many years.
Why is that, Jim?
Because once it slipped, the strain has been relieved.
Okay.
However, that then puts new stress
someplace else
at each end. Yeah. And so that's what happened in Turkey over the years, beginning at least about 1939 when eastern Turkey, major quake hit. And then about 5 years later, another major, a little to the west, and then another one, and another one.
All right,
and so 1999, it was clear that Izmit, Turkey, was right under the gun, and nobody was talking about it. And that's when the big one hit, right after the eclipse of the sun in 1999 on August 17th, was this quake, 16th.
So stress can be relieved, but it moves then to different locations around the planet.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the... you can determine well in advance when the maximum stress periods occur. And then often just some little variation, maybe a sudden storm, can cause excessive freshwater flooding coming down and meeting the high tides that are rising from the oceans.
Yes.
Or maybe strong winds off the ocean blows on shore and adds to the weight. The tides will build up to extreme levels at that point. So in many cases, what the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has called Parisian spring tides, that's when you get the closest approach of the moon on the same day as the newer full moon. And so you have a double whammy. And then at the end of the year, in early January, we have the third whammy when we're also closest to the sun. So the maximum possible tides are going to occur just next month. And so we still have a couple of weeks to be very concerned about.
You know, for years we've been talking on this show, Jim, about the dangers and the possibilities of tsunamis. A little bit later on, I want to talk with you about the one in the Canary Islands, the volcano there, and the possibilities there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I really believe not our listeners, but mainstream people probably took all of this with a grain of salt. Not anymore. Not anymore at all. With these tsunamis, there was a phenomenon here that I find to be fascinating, and that is before the tsunami hits land, it kind of like pulls away the water to the fact that it goes back into the ocean by a couple hundred feet. Is that true?
Yes, it made the beach 600 feet wider just before it came back inshore. As the water is building up, it's pulling water from all sides because it's
like sucking it up.
Yes, that's about the size of it. And out of the deep sea, the tsunami may be just 3 or 4 feet high, and a ship wouldn't even notice it. But when it begins to drag bottom, then it begins to build up, and you can actually reach a height of more than 100 feet.
As a matter of fact, the guest that I just had on, Dr. Tremblay, believes that the one in the Canary Islands, if it hits and hits big, could be 600 feet tall by the time it hits land.
Well, that one I do keep with a grain of salt. People, scientists are always looking for something to study. And I don't think there's ever been an example of a major submarine landslide causing a tsunami of hundreds of feet high. We know that in 1929 there was a 7-magnitude quake off the Grand Banks and off Newfoundland, and that caused a big mud flow that went out into the abyssal sea, and it broke several submarine Atlantic cables that they had, telephone cables, and it also caused a number of deaths from about a 20 or 30 foot tsunami that came up on the northeast.
On December 24th, we had an asteroid that came to within 1.2 million miles of the planet. Do you believe that had anything to do with it? And also, there have been some rumors that people are saying, what are the possibilities? We think a meteor or something smashed into the ocean and caused this. Is that possible?
Well, we would have had a more even distribution, I think, of the massive waves. There would have been even more widespread, like to the south.
And, more of a ripple effect, like you would throw a stone in a puddle or something. Okay.
Uh-huh. This thing about Canary Islands, I would give that about as much possibility as having a meteor actually hitting the Atlantic. It's something I would have no concern about. I'm much more concerned about normal hurricanes. We just came back from North Carolina visiting, and we're also there in September, in between the hurricanes. So they have a similar whole frightening possibility off Hawaii, where another landslide is believed possible to bring 100-foot waves. Now, the amount that the tsunami can sweep inland for several miles, but it doesn't mean you have a 400 or 500-foot wave. Just if it's a regular,
hopefully it's dissipating as it goes more inland.
Yes.
But
there
this one appeared.
After Krakatoa went off in 1883, there was a ship that was carried 2 miles into the jungle, and it stayed there. They could never float it again. It was too far away from water.
It's still there now?
Well, the natives have been dismantling it. Now there's just, I think, a little monument that marks the place.
Well, that's a strange story, too. Well, yeah. In this particular case, would you ever have predicted a 9 magnitude?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, now with the new scale, they talked about the Chilean quake in 1960 as a 9.6, and the Alaskan quake of 1964 as a 9.2. Now, look at this. Here's a 9.2, the last one we had of over 9 magnitude on the Kanamori scale with MW, which is a moment magnitude. It's only been around for about 20 years. So they upgraded a number of old earthquakes. And so the last 9 we had was Alaska, March 27th of 1964, on the day of the full moon. Coincidental, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, the World Series quake came just 3 days after the full moon and the closest approach of the moon of the year.
Jim, stay with us. I want to take phone calls. I want Coast to Coast listeners to be able to chat with you as well. And then I've got a few more questions here about the moon and its ability to pull. And then, of course, you know, the Earth, they say, was wobbling a little bit. What effect might that have on the future? And also, because, Jim, you look for animals that disappear right before an earthquake, apparently there are a lot of animals that just took for a high land out there in those regions. We'll talk with you about that as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
So tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy, its taste is on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine.
Live from somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
Next hour, world renowned psychic Sylvia Brown, our guest for Coast to Coast AM's remaining portion of the show. But this hour, it's geologist Jim Berklin and your phone calls. Very quickly, I want to tell you about the After Dark CD. By the way, lots of people got them for the holidays for Christmas. Now it's your turn to get one for yourself. 2.5 hours of great bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, and classic ghost stories. You can order by going to AfterDarkCD.com, right off the website, AfterDarkCD.com, or just call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. And before we close out the year, let me tell you again about Art Bell's free CD offer on Mel's Hole, that interview, the classic. When you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter or renew, call 1-888-727-5505 for that, or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Jim, as you look in the classifieds missing animals reports for local earthquakes, apparently a lot of people were spotting animals just taking off in scurrying away. And in some cases, many cases, they can't find any dead animals. It's like they all took off and escaped.
This is something I'm really going to follow closely, because I've been saying in the last few days we should hear many, many reports of unusual animal behavior, and just they left the peak in Pele before it erupted. Just everything that could crawl or fly or walk fled Pele in 1902. Now that big volcano erupted and killed about 30,000 people just the day after the eclipse of the sun.
And what is it, Jim, about this sixth sense that an animal has?
Well, there are a number of factors that are probable, and I've leaned strongly towards the magnetic field changes that we know precede large seismic events. And that most animals that they've checked have the mineral magnetite in their bodies, and it is a means of navigation. It's the most highly magnetic natural substance on Earth. It's the black sand when you're panning for gold. And they begin to discover it in the late 60s in bacteria, and then behind the pigeons' eyeballs and honeybees' abdomens, and in the dura around the brains of dolphins, and in the upper sinus passages of whales. And they also have found it over the human pineal gland, where the mystical third eye is supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So this, it's not just accidentally incorporated. You know, nature doesn't just play games. These are used for orientation and navigation. And you can just picture, you remember when all the whales beached themselves south of Australia?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. A couple hundred of them.
Yeah. They're pretty unusual. Down in Tasmania as well, just not that far away, south of New Zealand, an 8.1 quake hit just 3 days before the big Sumatra quake. And so I've noticed many times in the past, for very large earthquakes, you can see whales and dolphins beaching themselves up to 1,000 miles away.
Let's go to some calls now.
What is what?
Let's go to some phone calls.
Oh, sure.
All right, let's go east of the Rockies. Well, west of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mary Alice in Anchorage, Alaska.
Hi, Mary. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Well, I wanted to ask Mr. Berkland. I've been following you, and, you know, your predictions make sense. But I don't see on your website whether you take into account or study people such as myself who have physical symptoms.
Oh, sure. It's right. We have a whole place. On the website, there's a place there for sensitive people.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look again.
Go to the message board.
On the message board.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we have hundreds of people that have responded there, and I have no doubt whatsoever that some people definitely are sensitive to earthquakes. Now, I don't know if you can verify this. Of course, the big quake in Alaska in 1964, on the day of the full moon at the time of the lowest tides by the Cook Inlet. On that day, in Seward, a woman said that there were no seagulls left along the docks. Just amazing that afternoon not to see any seagulls, and there were rats and mice running around the streets of Seward. Now, this is another fairly common factor before large earthquakes.
How much time? What kind of leeway do we have
were
to monitor? That's it. Okay.
Now, also that afternoon, there were some delicate instruments installed on the island of Kodiak, south of Alaska, and they'd been in effect for about 3 months. And they were seeing these changes in the magnetism from the ionosphere. And they were detecting daily changes of 10, 15 gammas. And suddenly in the afternoon it shot to 100 gammas, and they thought there was something wrong with their instrument. And it all turned out the instrument was trying to tell them something, just like the animals try to tell us,
yep.
And too many people turned their backs.
A lot of the signs are there. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George. It's me, Jeff.
Oh, hi, Jeff. You're out of St. Louis.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Can I make a side note before my question real quick?
No, I've got too many people backing up, Jeff.
All right.
So
well,
go right to
does he see any activity along the New Madrid fault line or anywhere in Missouri?
Well, see, that's the hard part. With tides, it's worldwide. And it's up to the local people to see what's happening locally. What's happening with the animals? Do they run away from home, your pets? Does the egg production go down, the milk production go down? Do people lose their fear of people? Do animals lose their fear of people, and deer come around towns, and rats and mice run around broad daylight? Those kinds of things help pin down the where and how big. The tides only tell us when.
East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on with Jim Berkland. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mike from Cleveland.
Hi, Mike. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. I got a high one for Jim. If the tsunami, wherever it is, hit the East Coast, how much damage would that have caused to New York, Philadelphia, and the...
Oh, it'd be, I'll tell you, it'll be devastating if a big one hits the eastern coast of the United States.
And you spell trillions.
Yeah. Plus the devastation of lives, Jim, would be just incalculable. Well, how about that? Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George. Enjoy your show very much.
Thank you. Where are you calling from, sir?
Calling from New York.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's kind of an academic question. I'm looking for maybe Jim could give me references to a field guide or something about the sun and the moon, and not just the basics, but more, you know, how to intuit like one used to do in the field. If there's any books to get a primer to get interested in this study.
Okay, and I'll let you listen on your radio. Go ahead.
Yes, one that I sent 4 years ago is called... The Tides and the Pull of the Moon. It's by Francis Wiley. Came out about 1978. It was a literary, the science book of the month. And it is very clearly written, and it has tremendous bibliography in there. And it even has a chapter on tides and earthquakes. And I hadn't known that when I sent for it, so I was quite surprised.
How about your website, Jim? Lots of information on that as well.
Oh, yes. So we put everything we can on there, and we're getting lots of input from people. We've had now 112 million hits on my website since 1997 when I started it. And it's going up about a million a month these days.
Well,
and I would also encourage people that are interested in what I'm doing to send for a sample copy of my newsletter. Just send a self-addressed stamped envelope and put a couple of bucks in it, help me out there a little, and I'll send them an 8-page late issue of my newsletter. They can see if they want to subscribe at $40 a year, but just if they want to see a sample, just send me an envelope to Jim Berkland, P.O. Box 1926, in the little town of Glen Ellen, two words, California, and the zip is 95442. Doesn't matter much how they spell my name, but they put that P.O. Box 1926, Glen Ellen, California, and I'll get it, and I will get something off in the return mail for them.
Jim, wasn't it ironic indeed that this December 26 earthquake hits 1 year before the tragic earthquake that hit Bam in Iran?
It's just as coincidental as what happened 1 year after the Northridge quake.
Japan got a big one, right?
Yeah, that was in 1994, and it was on January 17th. And it was exactly 1 year later when the Kobe, Japan quake hit. And the Kobe quake also was greeted by some unusual animal behavior. Some strange fish came in close to shore, and fishermen were just netting them as fast as they could. And we're totally surprised by the 7-magnitude quake that occurred on the day of the full moon. And one would think people would, you know, my scientific colleagues would start paying a little more attention to the syzygy, new and full moon, and natural events, the earthquakes. And I do believe earthquakes certainly often trigger volcanic eruptions. It's not that unusual. When the big one hit Chile... In 1960, there was a 9.6 magnitude. It was followed by 9 quakes, aftershocks of 7 magnitude.
Oh, my.
And there were 3 volcanoes in the Andes that began to erupt within a couple of days. So it's not that unusual.
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn with Jim Berkland. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I'm from Peoria, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, you know, the animals that have been disappearing since the tsunamis hit.
Right.
Okay. Why shouldn't we start paying attention to these animals disappearing so that we have early warning during
Absolutely.
These disasters?
I would agree with that.
Well,
Jim,
I guess
I'm sure you've
been reading my mail. since 1979, when a physicist from Xerox called me, Antonio Nofferati, he said he noticed that the missing cat ads in the local paper would increase just before local quakes, and I was highly skeptical until I realized that our cat, Rocky, had disappeared just before the strongest quake since 1911 to hit the Bay Area. and it came back just 4 days before the next 5-magnitude quake in the Bay Area, 6 months later. So that made a believer out of me, and I have all the daily records now for several newspapers of the lost and found pets, and I see it happens time after time. Just before the World Series quake, instead of 4 or 5 missing cats, there were 27 ads, and each ad represents at least 100 animals. And the dogs went to 58 from their normal 15. So when you see those kinds of changes, you are obligated to do something about it and not just say, well, there's something wrong with the data, or maybe it was just, you see, if there was a thunderstorm, or if there was just a sudden flood or panic, mm-hmm. or 4th of July, that can also cause animals to run away. But if you see the runaway in large numbers without an explanation, suspect a quake is in the offing.
One of the horrible aspects beyond the deaths, Jim, now crocodiles are being pushed on the beaches, and they're scurrying all over the place by the hundreds, chasing people.
Well, they're pretty close to the beaches to begin with. They don't go out to the deep sea, and they're in the swamps and in the mangrove areas. But, there was some report that somebody rode a crocodile in from the tsunami, held on by squeezing on the eyes or something. We'll have to, go through all these reports and see what are really credible and what aren't.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up with Jim Berkland. Hi there.
Yes, for Alaska.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if he was aware of an earthquake that occurred July 10th, 1958, in Lituya Bay, Alaska, that caused a 1,740-foot wave.
Yes, that really was not a tsunami.
Oh, my.
No, it was not a tsunami.
What,
it was,
what was
the
it?
Side of the mountain crashed into the bay.
Yeah, it was it was the head of a glacier and a very narrow inlet, and this whole side of the mountain caved in. And there was a splash. It went up 1,700 feet. And then it ricocheted back on the other side and went up about 1,100 feet. And then it ricocheted back, and it just back and forth. You can see by the lost, missing forest.
Yes.
What had happened. But people are talking about that being a tsunami, and that's quite a bit different. But it was massive movement of water from a large earthquake.
Well, 1,700 feet in the air, that's pretty darn big, huh? No matter what it's called. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. I'm calling from New Jersey. I have been into earthquakes in my country, in El Salvador. The last one was in January 2001, the first one in 1986. We have pets at home, and we noticed, even 5 days before that, that our dogs, parrots, and everything changed at night. They keep whining and screaming at night.
Yeah.
And even my grandfather that lives with us, he said, it's an earthquake coming because we have activity every single month.
Good for you.
The problem is that they have told us that in Central America, what we call in Spanish the plates are moving under, and we are in what they call the fire belt for the volcanoes.
Ring of fire, yes.
Yes, and they are saying that any time we can have a very bad one. We have an 8-point-something, the last one, I think, 2001. So I wanted to know if you have any information about Central America. And the other thing is that it looks this last time, the 2001 earthquake, it devastated more than 60% of my country. El Salvador is a very small country. I just wanted to know if you have any information and what can we do. I guess nothing, just to wait.
Well, you can pay attention to what the moon is doing, for one thing. And then if you start seeing these animal activities that you feel are good clues, spread the word to your neighbors, get it into the newspaper, and put it on my website. Now, George, I don't think you know that there's about to be a book written about what I've been doing.
No,
and
I didn't
we're including
know that,
chapters about various stories about animals and quakes.
And the other thing... Excuse me, the other thing they have told us, and since I remember since I was a kid, that we want to have a lot of activity during the month, so it releases the pressure. Is that true?
No, that doesn't really make much difference, because the magnitude scale, to eliminate 1.7 magnitude quake, you would have to have 1,005. So the little quakes don't do much to relieve the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
But it just indicates that it's still restless. The Earth is always restless. Now, interesting to me that looking at the world maps of earthquakes since the big one just hit, it's been relatively quiet around the world, except in the Nicobar, Andaman Islands, in the Indian Ocean.
Right.
But here, up and down in South America and Central America, it's been pretty quiet. We haven't even had a six.
Yeah.
I would hope that you have a computer, ma'am?
She's listening on the radio.
Yes.
Don't you?
Please look at my website, which is Syzygy Job.
Well, you better spell that, my
friend. Yeah, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, and my initials, J-O-B, .com or .org. And you will go to my website, and you will see a place for message board, and you would go then and see about what I call the seismic sentries, which are the pets that are sensitive to earthquakes, and see a lot of stories such as you just told me. And I would love to have you write that in there. In fact, it may be incorporated in the book coming up called The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes. And that will be out before the 100th anniversary of the 1906 quake in San Francisco.
And I guess we're going to have to get you on the program, Jim, to talk about that book.
Huh? I'll be doing a little traveling along with Cal Ori, who is the author. She's written an awful lot about animals and quakes, and in the magazines, and she's written perhaps 50 stories. But this, I think, is her first book.
Jim, very quickly, I got a call yesterday during one of my open lines, and someone says that he knew of someone who was on a submarine, and that this person claims that they went under California in a certain region by 40 miles. Is that possible?
No, totally, totally impossible. People think that because there's a continental shelf, it's like going under a kitchen shelf, and it's fish are under there in a submarine.
Yeah.
Oh, there's absolutely nothing to it. And when people say, when's California going to slide into the sea and make Arizona a seaport, I say, well, right after the Atlantic states slide into the Atlantic. Besides, I have heard that the Phoenicians were pretty good seafarers. But,
I tell you what you need to do, though. Go look at the prophecies of Edgar Cayce, and I'd like to get your reaction to them when we get you back on again.
Fine. I have looked at them, yes.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate you being on the program. In a moment, we go live to Sylvia Brown, psychic, and later on tonight, we'll open up the phone line so you can talk with her as well. And if you're really nice to me, I might open them up a little earlier. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Get it in writing with the After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505.